It sounds strange, but for me, the way into this is something, is through something more familiar. We do actually already have a magical ability. We already possess this ability to enter other people's bodies. We all have it. And it's called, this particular faculty that enables this to happen, it's called the imagination. The imagination. We already possess a faculty that enables us to identify with something beyond ourselves. For example, just, I'm not talking about the imagination necessarily in any exalted sense at the moment. For example, you can be sitting here in the Shrine Room meditating. There you are, you're definitely in this room. If other people were to come in, oh look, he's sitting there. But you are not there. You are not there. Where are you? You've gone off on one. You're thinking about, oh yeah, well, maybe this afternoon I'll go for a walk up the shop and I'll get an ice cream. And you're actually picturing buying the ice cream, walking along with your friend, licking it. Or you're thinking, God, I'm really looking forward to getting home. There's that really good match on this afternoon. United-Chelsea, huge game. God, do you remember that game when they... You know, or you might, you know, might be vivid sex scenes going on, or, you know, you're picturing going back to work and, you know, how you're going to get, you're going to sort out that bloke who works in the office. Or you're imagining getting home. Oh, it's going to be great when I get home. You know, family will be there, or if you live with a friend, my friends will be there, and, you know, I'll be able to have a nice cup of tea and put the telly on, and there's that film, and there's vivid pictures going on. You are not in the Shrine Room, physically in the Shrine Room, but you're elsewhere. So, of course, this is not the imagination in any exalted sense. This is daydreaming, fantasizing. But the thing is, it does mean, the beautiful thing about this, it does mean that we're not completely identified with our experience in the moment. Yes, it's good to be in the moment. That's a whole other discussion. But the thing is, we're not completely locked into that. In Buddhist practice, we have to use this ability, this magical quality of mind, actually, to identify with others, to sort of be others. For example, in the Metta Bhavana, you can even just ask yourself the question in the different stages, what would it be like to be them? What would it be like to be them? That's a very interesting question, particularly, say, in the fourth stage. It's sort of easy in the second stage with a friend. You know, you'd like to be them. You know, you'd like to be with them and kind of see the world as they do. But with the neutral person, the sort of bland person, you know, who you see every day, I mean, you don't particularly fancy seeing the world as they see it because you think it's going to be terribly boring. Or, you know, certainly the person you don't like, the last thing you want to do is kind of look at the world as they do. But what would it be like to be them? To actually sort of, you can even imagine, sort of sitting inside them, looking out through their eyes, trying to see the world as they do. Just to ask this sort of question, what would it be like to be them, has a powerful effect in breaking up our fixed position. Recently, I was doing the Metta Bhavana quite intensively on another retreat we were having here, and I suddenly had this sense. I was just, before I kind of got going on the practice, really, and I started to reflect, well, everyone breathes. Everyone has bones and blood and so on, and those sorts of things aren't you kind of uniquely mine. And I had this sort of sense, I mean, it wasn't some incredible experience, but this sense of identifying with more and more people, that there was really no difference between me and them. In Metta Bhavana, you're just bringing others to mind, just picturing them, sensing them. You're exercising your imagination. You're using it to go out beyond yourself and to identify with others. And Shantideva regards this meditation as being especially powerful. He says, whoever longs to rescue quickly both himself and others should practice the supreme mystery, exchange of self and others. It's a practice that is liberating for oneself because, of course, you're moving towards egolessness. You're becoming less self-centered, less locked in, you know, to your own particular prison. And you're seeing through the delusive ideas about self and other. And you can begin to really help others because you can tune into them accurately as they are rather than what you think they are. You see them more clearly, relate to their actual needs. And, you know, when you relate to their actual needs, you can really help someone. So in these ways, Shantideva gives us ways to transform love and desire, ways to develop a deeper, a wiser, a more inclusive love and sympathy for others. This isn't an easy thing. It's not the work of the day. It takes years and years of practice, just patiently getting on with this, doing this, building this up. And of course, we need the support, the encouragement of others. It's why Sangha, why we regard Sangha and spiritual friendship as being so important. And it also gives us, you know, a kind of easier arena in which to practice this identification with others. You know, in the Sangha, at least everybody is attempting to practice the Dharma. And so even though they might be very weird and wonderful, you've got a good basis for identifying with people who are very different from you. That's why Sangha is such a good practice. And, of course, if we build up a community of people who have this kind of relationship with one another, we become a great example to the world, and we can have a quite powerful effect on the world.